Welcome back to The Hum and the Holler, the podcast that accompanies our 2021 calendar of small spells.
This is the podcast that if you're turning the pages of the calendar every month and wondering, what the hell is this about? We're here to tell you our theories, which, you know, as of this recording are just still working theories because nothing's been proved yet.
Totally. And this is sort of a continuation of us not really knowing what we're doing when we're making the spell. I mean, we have clarity as it comes through and it feels just right. And then we look at it and go, can't wait to live into this and find out what it means when it's actually that month and that time, because we are gathering meanings from our lives right now as we are living it. And hopefully we're also leaving a ton of room for you to find your own meanings in your own life as we do this.
Right. The Hum and the Holler, also known as a parade of questions. So we're really glad that you're joining us. We are Abacus Corvus. I'm Karina. I'm living on Lenni Lenape land, also known as Philadelphia.
And I'm Joe, and I'm nestled in the hills of Madison County in Western North Carolina on stolen Cherokee land. And this is our 8th episode. Before we go on, we just want to send our undying gratitude to our 29 Patreon supporters. Thank you. Thank you. I've been communicating with some of you about the missing meditation, and your grace and understanding has been incredible. I do intend to get back to that practice, perhaps once the mad summer is over, but it's been really nice to actually be in touch with you guys and hear a little bit about why you're a part of our fam. So thank you. We love you.
Thank you so much. And in addition to this particular podcast, The Hum and the Holler, on this same very feed, we have a podcast that's just called The Hum. You know, we just shortened it. And that is the astrology of every month moving from new moon to new moon. So look for the next one right before the new moon on September 6th. So sometime around September 5th, that one will be coming out.
Now, remember, my dear sister, that this calendar that we made that is a calendar of small spells is also a riddle. That's what we learned as we were making it. And so would you like to orient us to where we are in the riddle?
Yes, my dear sister, I would love to. So this is where things stand so far. We have got a hush holds the hum and the holler. Worlds within worlds hover here briefly. Gravity's lullaby, sing the evening, turning the certainty, and now grace follows awkward. It kind of feels like the end of a sentence there. It also feels like this spell brings us a little bit of encouragement and perspective after having weathered the shift of last month, turning the certainty.
Yeah, totally. It seems to relate to where we just came from. Turning the certainty has this whirling energy of newness and uncertainty and unfamiliarity. And so it makes sense that following that would be a kind of awkward period where you're acclimating to something new, you know, trying to learn, like use a new skill or even just be back in a place that's familiar, trying to integrate whatever it was that just happened from where you were that was unfamiliar.
Yeah. And as a grammar nerd, I've got to say that the last few spells have been a different kind of syntax. Gravity's lullaby is not a full sentence. Sing the evening is a command. Turning the certainty is, again, not a full sentence, just a clause. And so gravity's lullaby, sing the evening, turning the certainty have all felt kind of staccato and disjointed.
Definitely. And like semicolons, you know, like there's no period coming after there. Yeah.
Yeah. And grace follows awkward has a period. It is a full sentence. It has a verb that relates to the noun. This does that. So there is a feeling of closure in this spell, even though it is still talking about following. Like this comes after that. It still has this sequential rhythm that's happening, but syntactically, stay with me, nerds, syntactically it has a sense of closure to it.
Totally. Okay, let's talk about the image itself before we go on to the meaning. And now let me introduce to you Karina, my dear sister, who is particularly skilled at giving y'all the narrative of what you see when you look at the image for the month. I don't know why I'm just, maybe because I painted it. I just like look at it and I don't have the words that you have. So Karina, please, please give us your beautiful words.
This is what I learned from art school. This is the one thing I took away.
That makes
this is how you talk about what you're seeing. Because there are so many critiques where you have to, and specifically, you don't want to be like, this is how I feel about what I'm seeing. You're just trying to be like, this is what I'm seeing. So let's talk about what we're seeing. Maybe you're seeing this with me in this moment if you're looking at the calendar, or perhaps you're driving or trying to fall asleep or folding your laundry, in which case this is just story time and you can visualize the painting. So what we're looking at in this painting, Grace Follows Awkward, are three large birds, seabirds. They are all cranes. One is a great tufted crane with a very fancy little crown. The other two are sandhill cranes. And the three of them are in this kind of dance or conversation together where they're all facing each other and they have their wings up in different positions as though they are about to take flight, or maybe they've just landed, or maybe they're fighting, trying to intimidate one another. It's kind of this closed circle too, where the one in the very background, the tufted crane, is facing us, although looking at the bird in the middle. The one in the very foreground has its back to us, and the middle bird is kind of, you know, profile. And there's so much movement in this image, even though the colors are still fairly calm and sort of grayish blue like last month's. But the wings and the beaks are all pointing in different directions, and there's this chaotic sense of movement arrested. We talked a lot about movement last month, if you remember the bird and the fish in the circle, and that one had this regularity to it where you could almost imagine that circle as part of like a puppet show, you know, like a piece of paper on a wheel that just spins and one comes up and the other goes down kind of infinitely. And the movement in this image is far less rhythmic and intentional looking, and it looks a lot more like these cranes are at an awkward family photo where, you know, they're trying to get together, but the photographer caught them while someone was like yawning or sneezing. There's just much more of a feeling of like, whoops, about this particular arrangement of bodies.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah, I was actually really glad you mentioned that, because I just realized that last month we were talking about this whirling energy and it's unfamiliar and strange, but we talked about how clean and neat the image is. And now that's almost like that was like this, like a template for change, you know, and this is like what it actually looks
great.
Like.
We have a great idea
about, yeah. about what change is. It's just like, this is the concept for it. And then here in this month, we see the very, very colorful and awkward and feathery and still beautiful kind of messiness of it.
And I want to just shout out, kind of like bring us back to the very beginning of this calendar that began in stillness, just this feeling of a hush holds. And then there was this quiet hum coming through with the insects and the listening, but there was so much more of a sense of something compressed and silent and hard to access at the beginning of this riddle. And at the point of unraveling we're at right now, it's very different energy. Far more chaotic. Like, we are in motion. Mm-hmm. We are in action. Things are happening. We don't really know what it is yet, though. We're not good at it yet.
Totally. Actually, I'm just realizing also to kind of bring in where we are in the riddle. When Karina and I made this, we realized that each image, we would sort of identify them as either a hum, a hush, a hum, or a holler, kind of to see how much activity, how much noise was actually in each image. And I believe that up until now, there has been only one other holler. This is a holler. This one's a holler, and it's loud.
Right,
and the only other holler was the dahlias, which was also a kind of pseudo end. That was like our first, that was our first kind of, aha, we got it, you know? And how wonderful to have the next pseudo end be like, we don't got it. We're trying.
We definitely don't got it. But look how many wings we're flapping.
Yeah.
We're flapping such big wings about it.
And we're in community. You know, we're all trying. We're all trying in some way. Like, So that might be a good jumping off point for the next section.
So let's look a little bit more at the meaning, our working theory of what the hell this is all about, as it were. When we are looking at this phrase, grace follows awkward, what are we talking about? I know that my first thought, and the one that I'm least interested in, is this idea of, oh, you know, practice makes perfect. You start out doing something kind of awkwardly, and over time you do it, and you do it, and you become graceful, and all is well. And while that is an available reading, it's not my favorite reading, and so I want to go a little deeper. So let's talk about, what are we even talking about with awkward? What is happening here? Joe, what are your thoughts?
I got some love for awkward. Let me just start by saying that. That's partly why I agree that it's like, there is an element of this where awkwardness can be thought of as like physically, any action that you're doing that you don't have the muscle memory for yet, you know, can be thought of as awkward, whether mm-hmm. that's like dance steps or using certain kinds of tools or musical instruments. I would also say even like emotional muscles, right? Like if you set awkward boundaries when you're first learning mm-hmm. how to set boundaries, if you didn't learn that organically as a kid. And so there is some sense that like, if you do practice dancing enough, it'll make perfect, you know, you'll find grace. But I also think that I've talked to some people that claim that that is not true for their bodies, that dancing just is not their thing, you know? And so we're not saying that if you practice something over and over again, you're just going to get good at it. And that's what we need you to do. We need you to get good at this thing, right? That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. And there's so much cultural pressure for that. Like there's this myth that if you mm-hmm. just put in like 10,000 hours mm-hmm. at any one thing, you'll become mm-hmm. really proficient at it. And I feel like that takes away all of the individual context of our lives and where our energy sparks and what circumstances we're working
also, to what end, day, right? To what end? Like, get good at this so that you don't need anybody anymore. Yeah. Get good at this so you can become some sort of like dehumanized poster child for somebody else's agenda. Like, why do we even need to get so good at things if, you know?
Whew, that hits me where I live. But we need to be good at things.
I know.
We're going into Virgo season, Joe. We really need to be good at things.
I think, you know what? You want to be good at something? Try to be good at being like a whole human. You know, like, anyway, so yes, there's a lot going on here, but culturally, there's another kind of awkwardness that's like learned, it's conditioned, it's our social conditioning of sort of learning that like a certain kind of tactlessness is awkward. There are faux pas that are awkward. If there's tension or conflict, that can feel awkward. And what I've learned also, you know, is that big emotion, right? At least in the culture that I'm used to in America, like showing big emotion is like mm-hmm. a no-no. It's awkward. People are like, oh my gosh, right? So very interesting to think about what's happening to other people when they are sensing mm-hmm. awkwardness. It's as though, oh no, you're making me feel something I don't want to feel.
Right. And it seems like awkwardness is something that only exists in relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you're alone, you might like trip and stumble and feel awkward, but it's because you're imagining a viewer mm-hmm. in that moment.
Or you're judging yourself.
You're seeing yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you've split yourself mm-hmm. so that one part of you is watching the mm-hmm. other and being like, oof, awkward. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, there's a lot of good juice in there. So we're going to pause that. We're going to get into a little bit more of that, later. And
yeah, so let's talk about grace. Let's talk about the other half of this.
Maybe it's just from my upbringing, but the very first thing that comes to mind when I hear the word grace is ballet, because that's where I spent a lot of my time. And I spent a lot of time in ballet with a body that did not conform to ballet, whatever bullshit. So
body norms.
Yeah. So when I think about grace, I think about like utter physical refinement, you know, like you are doing something that is so hard, but you're making it look easy. You're incredibly coordinated. And making it look easy. There it is again. Don't show anybody what it actually feels like to do the thing you're doing.
Right.
You know, like, right. Like don't grunt when you do that really big high kick, even though you want to, right? You're going to just look like a little doll. So composure, stoicism, right? There's all those forms of grace.
Right. And there's another common understanding of grace, which is theological. So if you have grown up in a country that is Christian dominant, like we have, you are probably most familiar with grace as this Christian idea of God's benevolence, like the words amazing grace. There's this very strong association with that. So that exists. But it's not necessarily where we're trying to go with this spell, but I just want to call it out to say you might have this association, and perhaps if that is a faith tradition you belong to, that's resonant for you.
Yeah, it's not what we're trying to say either.
Right, it's one of the many working theories, one of the many available readings of this spell. For us, as Jewish witches, there is a different level that's most resonant. And I like to go back to the Hebrew word chen, which can be translated all kinds of ways, but often is translated as grace. But it's essentially something that happens that is like an unearned gift. It's mercy or compassion versus justice. Grace is this disruption of the cause and effect of something bad happens and then it's punished. Grace is something that happens unexpectedly and disruptively to a cycle of, you know, the bad get punished or, you know, something happens as a cause and effect. I think I like the words of cause and effect more than like sin and punishment, because we can come back to that idea of dancing and think about how one of the things that's amazing to watch when you're watching one of those highly skilled trained dancers who has learned how to make pain invisible, who has learned how to make their bodies do things that are bizarre to our bodies, is that what we're watching is almost like the lack of cause and effect, right? If you're going to kick your leg that high, you should be grunting. If you're going to pirouette like that, you should fall on your face. And yet it's not happening. It's a disruption of what we expect as cause and effect, and that's what we call grace. So
you know what? Can I jump in really quick? Because
please.
As you were talking about cause and effect, I was also thinking about we have to repair the world. When you said that really struck me, and how grace comes in to disrupt a cycle. And it also sounds to me like it's a time to rest. Like if there was no grace there, we would just be working all the time because we're making mistakes all the time. The world, you know, like there's this human pattern of folly. You know, like we are not going to get to a point where we don't have folly, where we don't make mistakes, where we don't hurt each other or get hurt. That's not going to happen. So it's like we need at some point some other force to be present that can interrupt that cycle so that there can be rest and another kind of reparation, right? That there can be something that happens relationally that brings deep connection and deep meaning that isn't work.
Right. Yeah. And it reminds me of when we're doing conflict work, when we are in any kind of process of conflict transformation, accountability, trying to find a resolution and a moving forward when there has been harm done. On one level, we can get caught up in the justice angle of it, which is this harm happened and I need something to punish it. And I need there to be a consequence. I have been hurt and I need there to be a consequence is maybe the way I want to say it. And that consequence can also cause harm. And then the person who experiences that harm will also want a consequence for their harm. And that this is a cycle that can go on endlessly without the interruption of grace. Without someone voluntarily saying, I'm willing to let it die here. I am willing to repair this relationship rather than keep pursuing what I consider just.
I was just thinking as you were talking how of like we keep using the word repair, and I'm thinking about reparations and how fully in support of them we are.
I'm glad you bring this up because I think when I just get to get back to the idea of awkwardness, when I consider awkwardness on its multiple levels, one of the places that I find it in myself as a white person is in the knowing that I might do something wrong when I'm in relationship with people of color. Is in that fear of awkwardness of what if I say the wrong thing? What if I accidentally do a microaggression? You know, what if there's some way in which I am not graceful and I cause harm? Mm. And that this fear of awkwardness can prevent repair and relationship.
That's right.
And that
that's right.
Repair and relationship and reparations all feel kind of knit together for me. Mm-hmm. And that awkwardness is often a part of it, right? Mm-hmm. That there is this sense of needing to move through awkwardness and needing to move through the shame around awkwardness and the mm-hmm. way that we don't always know how to behave perfectly in our relationships with each mm-hmm. other. And that grace is the unasked for gift of allowing there to be room for that awkwardness. Mm. And I think about this when I think about the people that I either know personally or have read about, or, you know, like my mentors in the world of anti-racist work, who have such generosity mm. for the white people who are trying, just such incredible generosity mm-hmm. for, okay, I have room for this. Not everyone does, not everyone has to, mm-hmm. but the ones that do, it is not a requirement. Mm-mm. It is not.
It's not cause earned. And effect. It's not earned.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not yeah. anything that we as white people have earned and been like, we deserve this now. It is. It is always only a gift that can come from someone who is willing to be in relationship with you. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you're bringing this in because the awkwardness. I think awkward is both an appropriate word and also a kind of small word when it comes to the things that white people can experience mm. in terms of obstacles in doing anti-racist work, because there's shame, and shame is a big obstacle in that work. Mm. 'Cause if you feel it so deeply, you know, and there's also an awkwardness. This is something we were talking about a little bit earlier or at the beginning of the meaning section. There's an awkwardness that is really authentic that we experience where you're not doing anything wrong. You know, like you're just being you.
So moving away from anti-racist work, moving more toward
when your awkwardness,
this is what it feels like to be a human,
is actually not causing harm. Like, so yeah, the awkwardness mm-hmm. and the shame is an obstacle as a white person because you actually have to be digesting and present for the fact that you are causing harm by just being yourself, mm-hmm. by being the way that you have been conditioned mm-hmm. to be, is like a weapon that you are using again and mm-hmm. again and again, and it feels terrible, and so people don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Also, you know, do it anyway. Do it a lot. Right, do it right, as right. much Let's as you possibly with, can.
Do it anyway.
Do it anyway.
And do it. Do it with compassion for yourself.
Do it with compassion with yourself and yeah. Don't do it alone. You know, mm-hmm. like do it like these cranes dancing, flitting around each other. Like, but do it. That's where we're going to close out the anti-racist section.
yeah,
do
let's it. Just land with.
Do it anyway.
Worth doing. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
And let's talk about this other kind of awkwardness that's a totally different.
Totally different.
Segue.
Totally yeah. different segue. Mm-hmm. This is an awkwardness mm-hmm. that. Gosh, how does it even become awkward? When did it even become awkward? You know, like there's something about, go ahead. You were just looking like you were about to say something there.
I think this is the kind of awkwardness that we don't feel when we're younger mm-hmm. and we don't have this internalized viewer.
That's right.
Of this is how I look. I remember doing wild dances when I was like 3 or 4 years old and thinking that I looked amazing, that I was like stunning.
You were.
Stunningly impressive.
You really were.
In my skill and feet. Uh-huh. But, you know, the adults would giggle. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, I got the message from the outside world that my dancing was not necessarily graceful. Mm. And that's when I started to feel the sense of, oh, I'm awkward.
Uh-huh.
Right? My sister's the ballet dancer. Uh-huh. I am the bookish one. Uh-huh. I'm a little more awkward in my body.
Oh my gosh. You just made me realize that if you're graceful enough, you earn the maybe the internal permission for awkwardness as well. Is that maybe I've learned that I get to be awkward in my body because I've already done the graceful thing. I know I can do that. Mm. And so now I get to be awkward, which is, you know, like there's some sort of reclamation in it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we also need to talk about beauty culture and how easy it is for people who have gotten the message from our culture that they are graceful, that they are beautiful, how easy it is for them to be like, oh, I push this away. I wear the awkward clothes. Uh-huh. I give myself the awkward haircut.
Talk about.
Because look, you know, I don't.
Talk about unearned grace.
Right. And people who have gotten a different message from the culture are hustling so hard to be like, no, I swear I can make a good impression. Mm. Look at me now. Mm-hmm. Right. I've got the style, I've got the makeup, I've really thought about how to make what I was given look graceful.
Right.
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 So I think
that's great.
There's a lot there too around body norms.
Totally.
And
thank you.
Hierarchies of beauty.
So maybe one of the things that we're trying to say here is that there may be an inherent awkwardness to being human. And that it is not to be avoided. It is not to be punished. It is not to be avoided. It can, I guess, in this particular spell, maybe even celebrated some. Because I don't think we celebrate that which, like, if you can think about awkward as something that falls outside of the beauty norms, right? There is so much deep internal and relational fulfillment for you if you embrace everything that falls outside of the culture's beauty norms. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's delicious to be able to,
it's just
the yummiest thing in the world to live outside of them, to give yourself permission to live outside of them and connect with people as though they are the bullshit that they are.
To recognize that norms are the bullshit that they are.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's also something about that kind of awkwardness that we experience interpersonally that is not the awkwardness of, oh no, I'm causing harm, but is more the awkwardness of, I don't know how to say this thing right now, or I'm maybe feeling a little vulnerable, or my body's moving in some strange, gawky way. That awkwardness is incredibly endearing.
Oh, I'm so glad because I've been there. I've been there for like the last 10 minutes.
And I mean, you know, y'all of you listening to us right now doing this podcast about the awkward may have noticed how deeply we are embodying it.
Oh my God.
In this particular podcast. I mean, how can we not?
Yep.
Right?
The only thing you don't get to say or don't get to see are like the little grimaces that I'm giving my sister in their little Zoom windows. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just said that. Whatever.
Is this our words now? Yeah. So here we are.
So as we are embodying this spell, we can say that one of the aspects of it, one of the dimensions of it, is to encourage us to be the fullness that we are, right? Oh, we didn't say this earlier. Grace follows awkward. It does not mean that grace replaces awkward and that awkward is no more.
Right. It's not a recipe where it's like you take this much awkward and then you do the thing and it's just only grace.
That's right.
That's how recipes work.
That's how recipes work. So grace follows awkward, but also it might feel better sometimes, but it's not actually better. There isn't a hierarchy. There's just a relationship that these are two things that we experience. Sometimes they feel polarized against each other, but like, you know, you don't get like love and loss are similarly sewn together as awkward and grace. You don't get one without the other. They don't even make any sense without each other. And one thing that I have found incredibly helpful in my in my experiences in the last couple of years is really recognizing the full, I guess, humanity of people that we idealize, right? That's another way of like, maybe grace follows awkward. And maybe I want to end this with like, maybe you can also insert a little bit of awkwardness where you assume there is only grace, you know, like maybe we can have it be a bit more of a full circle. Mm-hmm. I think I need to share this dream. And you want to say something first before I share my dream?
Well, the last thing that I want to throw in about this spell before we conclude is how much physicality there is in it. And that the reason we chose cranes is because giant seabirds like this are so incredibly graceful. They have these beautiful, long, graceful necks. Mm-hmm. They do all the things birds do that make us jealous. And they're so incredibly awkward. If you see a giant bird trying to take off, you know, in the way that it like humps its back and its legs are hanging and it's just like whapping the air, really trying to get airborne, you know, that there is this both and combo.
Oh my gosh.
Happening.
Oh my gosh.
That I think is worth holding on to as we are considering our own human selves.
Yeah. It's like we are encouraging you at the end of this podcast to think about all of the uncurated moments of all the people who look so fine on Instagram. Like all of, like, yeah, if you look at the crane during this moment and this moment, and only at those moments, you will think that they were the most graceful beings in the world. And yet there is so much more time and so much more experience that we often don't get to see of people. If people are showing us narrow versions of themselves, curated versions of ourselves, it can be actually very hard to remember that we're all awkward, you know?
Yeah.
A dream that I had a couple years ago about my long-term therapist, I've been seeing her for a long time. She is kind of like a crane. She's tall and slender and graceful. And I think she does everything. I used to think she does everything right. And, you know, we needed a little bit of a fall from grace, which we haven't even mentioned yet. Right. In order for me to understand that I can also make mistakes, that I am not trying to strive towards this level of gracefulness, either as a human or as a therapist, that I'm actually striving for a kind of wholeness, right?
Right.
But this dream came and really like hurried that process along, because it was as though she had gotten a new website. I was looking at her website. I was so impressed. She was walking. There was a video of her on the website walking towards the camera wearing like this violet gray satiny dress, and her hair was perfect, and she was walking slowly looking at the camera like she was all that. And it was like I was so impressed, and I was a little intimidated. I was like, fuck man, she just like leveled up. What am I gonna do? And then she turns away from the camera, goes over to the wall, and attempts a handstand over and over and over again. And each time the dress falls up, she's falling down. Like she cannot do a handstand, and just keeps kind of laughing. And I woke up just really feeling much freer. I was like, oh yeah, this person can't do everything well. And yet maybe still deserves a fancy website and a good dress, you know?
Yep.
For the ritual this month, Karina and I are once again in agreement, so I'm going to be the voice of the ritual that we are both offering you. And this month we're going to be taking our cues, taking a lead from authentic movement, which is something that's worth looking up. I think it's like capital A, capital M, authentic movement. It's a very rich practice that I'm not going to get into here, but that you can learn about elsewhere. I also like to reclaim authentic movement into lowercase a and lowercase m, because that's really all it is. It's, you know, it's you moving authentically. And the part that I want to shout out to is that the idea that comes from this practice is that you be witnessed, that there be a witness to your authentic movement. And for this ritual, by all means, pair up with a buddy or multiple buddies and witness each other moving. If that's available to you, if you want to do that, oh yeah, that would be just an amazing ritual. But you can also witness yourself, and you can have the ritual be one of practicing that. And as a witness, you are not judging. You are not criticizing. You are not coming up with any kind of qualifying assessment of what's going on. You are just watching my hand go up and down, my belly jiggle side to side, head stuck to the right shoulder. Whatever it is that's happening, you're really just noticing the movement. And so to do this practice, you decide how much time you want. If you got a lot of busyness and you need to just set a 5-minute timer so that you do it, go for it. If you have spaciousness, you can just have it be an open-ended time if you'd like. And to practice this, you also might want a mirror. Mirrors sometimes helpful, sometimes the worst. So kind of test it out. If you can play with a mirror as really witnessing your body without that judgment, great. If you notice that you're assessing your body in some way, ditch it. And the idea here is that you notice the movements that your body wants to make. This is a very bottom-up process. So rather than it being your mind choreographing your body or directing your body in some way, the idea is that you're going to leave a lot of space to see if you can find out what your body wants to do in the moment. And it could be stillness. It could be little stuff. It could be really big stuff. It could be a whole narrative dance. It could be just pressing, you know, the bridge of your nose for a while. I mean, it's like literally the most open-ended process. And that can be difficult, but even maybe the ritual could be just trying it, just seeing if you can hear or feel an impulse that comes from your body, letting it happen and noticing it without judgment. And it could be just that, or you could really roll with it. So have fun. And if you want to do this, but have a hard time or whatever, I would actually have you feel free to reach out to me if you have questions about how it happened or anything, because this is so dear to me and hard to give people as just like a verbal assignment without there being some kind of relational conversation about it. So I'm really open to chatting more with you if you want to know how to do this ritual a little bit more than what comes natural. Okay, have fun. Well, I guess we'll just see after editing how awkward this podcast is. And right now I'm just feeling the grace of having it be done. Oh, we're not too bad. It's only the 15th. I thought it was like the end of the month again. We're halfway there. Okay, cool. We're done. Thank you for being here with us. Done. We're done.
But you should keep listening. There's just a few more things. There's going to be something really interesting after our shout outs too. So just hold on for a second.
This is the wrap up. This is the closing. Please follow us on Instagram. We do what we can. Sometimes there are weekly sales. Most of the time there's just this blog. Oh, but our calendar is in hand.
We have a new one.
You guys, we have a new calendar. Mm-hmm. Maybe next podcast we'll talk a little bit about it and how it's a little bit different. We're so excited about it. It exists. The pre-orders are still going while we catch up on shipping, and then the orders are going to go live in a couple weeks or a week or something. But you can follow us on our website, abacuscorvus.com, or on Instagram at abacuscorvus.
And if you're listening this far into the podcast, you must actually enjoy what we're doing. And if that's true, then we really encourage you to rate and review this podcast and tell your friends about it and do all of the things to try to generate some buzz, because we're brand new and that's something that we don't do as much of as we probably should. We kind of need you to do that for us because we're busy like getting awkward over here and like drawing things. Also, if you want this ad-free, you can follow us on Patreon. See what I'm saying? Not so good at remembering what to tell you.
This is fun, though, you guys. I think this is, like, the message is that it's actually way more fun to just let yourself be awkward and stop worrying.
Okay, so the most awkward thing that we can do to close this out is to tell you about our dreams.
Oh, yeah.
And so I want to tell you, along the lines of physical awkwardness, I want to tell you I had a dream the other night that I was with two dear friends, and we were at an all-night outdoor ritual that was kind of like a street party, but it had a strong ritual feeling. And by ritual feeling, what I mean is everyone gathered was there for like the same purpose, to raise energy in a very specific way. And I found that when I was in this crew partying and dancing all night, I was able to just like do this wild dance where my arms were straight up in the air and just kind of circling, you know, like I was just like the dance that some gays call the fork in the garbage disposal, that kind of dance. I was doing that dance just with no effort. Everyone else's energy was just buoying me up, and I was just circling around that garbage disposal like a fork, just being like, I could do this forever. This is amazing. So that was a dream I had the other night. Joe, will you tell me your dream about the river?
Sure, but yours was so good and so perfect. I dreamt last night that I was sitting alongside a river with some group of people. I don't even know what was up, but we were supposed to do some kind of healing for the river. And I was confused by this because I felt like the river was probably doing okay. But I was staring at the river, and it was going like between these two mountainsides. And even though my body wasn't moving, I saw that my perspective started to move closer to, like, move basically at the pace that the water was moving in the river, and started progressing through the river. So I was like, cool, we're going to go with this. And my mind rode the river through a section of rapids that were super, like, they would have been very sketchy to traverse on a boat, like maybe deadly. But as just a mind, I got to go through it and feel the madness of it without it hurting my body, and land on the other side and kind of like cruise to the sweet meandering part of the river again. And then when I got off the river, my body was there at the end of the river, not at the beginning of the river. And my sister and I were talking about this dream, and she was referencing the river, you know, like a metaphor for life. And I just let her know that actually in the dream, it didn't feel like a metaphor. It just felt like a river.
You were like, oh, no, 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 no. In the dream, that was definitely not a metaphor.
It didn't feel like one.
It was just a literal river.
It was just a river. Yes. And my mind was riding it. Yeah. And my body was safe. That's what was happening.
Which is not a metaphor for anything at all. Why would it be?
Cheers, you guys. Have a great month.